The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Told us. Eile told us Yitzchok ben Avraham, and these are the generations of Yitzchok, the son of Avraham. Avraham haylidas Yitzchok. Avraham gave birth to Yitzchok. Vayhi Yitzchok ben Arboim shono, bekachte srivka bas besula arami mipan narom, acheis loven arami leili isho. And Yitzchok was 40 years old when he took Rivka as a wife, the daughter of Besuel, who was the sister of Loven. Vayata Yitzchok l'ashem l'neichach ishtei ki akorihi. And Rivka did not have any children, so they were mispalel, they prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because she was barren. And he was answered, and Rivka conceived and became pregnant. And then the Torah goes on to tell us of the birth of the two children, Yaakov and Esav. The subject of Yaakov and Esav is a subject that we've dwelled on many times before, but since this is basically the major theme of the Sedra, and very, very important theme, something that we learn much from, and something that has to do with the basic tenets of the Torah. So we'll go into it again this evening. And there was a great struggling in the womb of Rivka by the children. And she said, she didn't know what was happening. It was a very unusual struggle. And she was going through a very unusual Tsar Ibor and Tsar Ledo. Very unusual birth pangs. Vatelech Lidrei says Hashem. So she went to seek out from Hashem what was happening. Rashi tells us Lebeis Midroshe Shel Shem. There was Shem, who was a son of Nayach, who was a righteous man, and he had a yeshiva, a Beis HaMedrash. So she went to ask for a prophecy. And Hashem said that there are two nations in your womb, and two empires shall come out from your womb. And one will take strength from the other, and the older one shall serve the younger one. So came time to give birth, and there were twins in the womb. And the first one that came out was red, and he was covered with hair, very mature. And they called him Esav. And afterwards his brother came out, and Yaakov, the brother, was holding on to the heel of Esav, and his name was called Yaakov. And Yitzchok at that time was 60 years old. Now we're familiar with what happens later, that near the end of the Sedra, Yitzchok calls Esav in and tells him that I want to give you the broches. These were the broches which Yitzchok received from Avram. Avram was given the broches when he was told to leave his eretz, lech lecha me'atzecha, and again he was given the broches at the Akedah Yitzchok when he offered Yitzchok. And these broches Avraham gave to Yitzchok, and now Yitzchok wanted to give them to Esav. And the entire destiny of where Israel would come from was dependent on these brochas. And Rivka, she knew that Esav was not the one to carry the destiny of the brochas, the destiny of the Am Hashem, the chosen nation, the nation that would bring Torah to the world. And therefore, she called Yaakov and she said, you go and you act as if you're Esav. And she covered his arms with Esav's clothing. She gave Esav his clothing. She gave Yaakov Esav's clothing, and she covered Yaakov's arms with the wool of sheep in order that he could disguise himself. And then he went and he received the brachas from Yitzchok. One of the major questions is, how was it possible that Yitzchok was prepared to give the brachas to Esav? Esav, as we know, was a rosha. Was a very wicked person. The Gemara tells us, and the Medrash tells us, that he was a shefach dam, he was a murderer. And he was Megal Arayis. He was a person of great immorality. Tzod Noshim Tachas Baalehim. He would go and take wives away from their husbands. So how was it that Yitzchok could come and decide to give Esav these brachas? We'll go into these psukim that we read a little more closely, and we'll see what we can learn from them. The fact that Rivka was having a great sar ibur, great pains of pregnancy, this was not something normal. Because she wouldn't have gone to ask for a prophecy just because she was having a difficult time. So we understand that there was something very unusual going on. And when she received the prophecy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told her, Shnei goyim bevitneich. These are not two children. You're not carrying merely two children, but you're carrying two nations. What's going to come from your womb will be two nations. And then Rashi tells us, Goyim, Ksiv, Kimei Geim. The word is not written Goyim, nations, but the way it's written, it's closer to Geim. The Yud and the Aleph is interchangeable. Geim means not merely nations, but nobility, aristocrats. These two sons that will come from you will be very, very great aristocrats. And Rashi cites the Gemara in Masechet Avodah Zarah, that tells us, Elu Antoninus Verebi. Two descendants from these two sons. One was Antoninus, who was the ruler of the Roman Empire. He was the Caesar. And at the same time was Rabbi Yehuda Anosi, who at that time was the prince of Israel. The descendants that will come from Esav will be the nation which will be known as Edom, a very, very, very powerful empire. And from Edom will come many, many other nations. And of their greatest nations will be Rome. And Antoninus was the emperor of Rome at that time, while Rabbi Yehuda Anosi was the prince of Klal Yisrael. So the descendant that will come from Yaakov will also be great nobility. And these two lived at the same time. And this was an example. This was an insight as to what type of nation they would give birth to. And these two were very powerful. Rome ruled the world. And they were very wealthy. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yehuda Anossi had wealth which might have been equivalent to Antinonis. They lived in a palace. And they were very good friends. The Gemara says, Shelei posku me'al shulchonim leitzein velechazeres leibe yimeisachama velebe yimeisach shomim. That from their table never ceased radishes or lettuce, not in the summer and not in the winter. There were always fresh vegetables on their table. Now this is an extraordinary feat, because in the times when there was not the communication or the transport that we have today, or in the times when you don't have such modern refrigeration, it wasn't easy to have fresh vegetables on your table every day, be it summertime or even wintertime. So this was an extraordinary feat. But the Maral in the Gurai explains that something else is being taught to us here. Fresh vegetables is something not that one indulges in. If a person is looking for the luxuries of this world, he wouldn't necessarily be interested in the fresh vegetables on his table every day. Yet we see that they were very demanding that this would be so. This was more of a sign of an aristocracy, of a chashivus, than merely people indulging in the luxuries of life. And we find that the descendants of Esav were aristocrats. From him came the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire was a very noble nation, aristocratic nation. It was an empire which, the Gemara says, in the beginning of Masechet Avodah Zarah, built the most beautiful marketplaces that the world has known, and the most exquisite bathhouses, systems of luxurious bathhouses that the world had known. And they were a nation that were very, very scrupulous in their dress and in the way they cared for themselves, which means that they were aristocrats. Not like many other nations that are not necessarily, for example, the sons of Ishmael, the Arab nations. That were not so too particular just how they lived or how they dressed or how they ate. And so with Klal Yisrael. Wherever Yisrael went, the children of Yaakov, whether they were wealthy or poor, they conducted themselves with great honor and great discipline. And they always maintained a very great standard of self-respect. And this is the sign of the type of nations that would be born from here that the prophecy was giving to Rivka. Shnei goyim, not only nations, but geim. Geim is from the word goer. Proud. Full of nobility and full of aristocracy. These would be the nations that would come. And we do find that the rabbis teach us that this Roman Empire that was to be rule the world, its influence is still here today. We are still under its influence. And this is what the rabbis call the modern civilization of today since the Roman Empire. And this is basically Western culture or European culture. And European culture and European nobility all followed suit. If it were the English or the French or the Germans or the Austrians, all followed suit with this. So this was one of the prophecies. Then the prophecy stated, "Ushnei leumim ma'ayich yiporedu." They should be. They will be leumim. Now, not only they will be nations, and not only proud nations, but leumim. Rashi says, "Leumim ein le'im el malchus." This is an empire. Not only nations, but they will be empires. They will be great empires. And to give us an insight into this, this is the Medrash, what we've quoted many times at the beginning of the creation of the world. But it states, Bereishis bara Elokim, Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world. Es ha-shomayim ve-es ha-oretz, ve-oretz ha-es ha-tov ve-vol, ve-cheshech ha-pnei ha-tohom. That the world had an emptiness, an avoidness, a darkness, and a depth, an unending depth. Now these were all symbols of imperfections in the creation. When the Almighty created the world, there were imperfections. And the Midrash tells us this refers to four great empires that would rise up during the course of time to rule the entire world. The first one would be the Babylonian Empire. They destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. The second one would be Porus Modai. This is the empire of Ahasuerus, which the Purim story tells us of. They will destroy the Babylonian Empire, and they will try to rule the world. And the third one will be the Greek Empire. This is the story of Hanukkah, where they will take away the kingship from Porus and Modai, the Syrian-Persian Empire. And the fourth one will be the greatest of them all. And this will be Edom. This will be the descendants of Esau. And it was the Roman Empire that destroyed the Greek Empire and ruled the world. And then the Midrash tells us, Ma tahom, ein lo cheker, af malchus revis, ein lo cheker. It's just like the depths. This is the word which refers to this empire. Will have no end. One will not be able to see the end of it. So will it be with the Malchus Revis, the fourth empire. No one will be able to see the end of it. There's another Medrash that when Yaakov, in a Sedra to come yet, went to sleep and he dreamt of a ladder. And he saw angels going up and coming down. So the Medrash tells us that he also saw the empires, the princes of each empire going up the ladder and coming down. And each one he saw go up a certain amount of steps and come down. But when it came to the fourth, he saw him go up and he didn't see him come down. Because the greatness of this fourth empire will be so mighty that it will be impossible to prophesize his end. And this we find. We find that the first empire, the Babylonian Empire, destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, sent Israel into Golus, but after 70 years they returned and the first empire was finished. Porus Modai, the Syrian-Persian Empire, his reign didn't last that long because it was immediately after Mordechai that Jews started to return to Eretz Israel. And the second Beis HaMikdash was built. The Greek Empire also didn't last that long. They invaded Eretz Yisrael. They caused a lot of misery and a lot of trouble. They killed, they plundered. But eventually they also were subdued. But the fourth empire, the Roman Empire, destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, exiled Klal Yisrael, killed and plundered, and over 2,000 years we have not been returned to Eretz Yisrael or to the Beis HaMikdash.
we see their strength is still in the world.
And then the Midrash continues.
V'ruach Hashem arachaves al pnei hamoyim, that the spirit of Hashem hovers over the water. V'ruach Hashem, the spirit of Hashem, this refers to the Melech HaMashiach.
This refers to the seed of Yaakov.
Merachaves al pnei hamoyim, hovers over the water, that will come and destroy the Malchus Revi'is, the fourth empire. When will he come? Al pnei hamoyim, v'schus hamayim. He will come through the merit of water.
So the Midrash says this is the merit of tshuva.
That one day a great individual will rise up, who will be from the seed of David,
who is the seed from Yaakov Avinu.
So great that his wisdom will be greater than that of Shlomo HaMelech, of King Solomon. Almost as great as Moshe Rabbeinu.
And he will inspire all of the people to return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
And then he will destroy
the fourth empire. But only then
will the fourth empire be destroyed. And just as the Gemara tells us,
that no man
will know who, what his name is, and when he will come, therefore no one will know the end of the fourth empire. And that's why Yaakov Avinu, he saw
that they went up the ladder, but he couldn't see them come down. So this is what the Torah is telling us, the prophecy. Not only will they be two nations, but they will be
two le'umim,
two empires,
the mightiest empires that the world has known.
And we see historically
that the Roman Empire was the greatest empire the world has known, and the Chazal tell us that they still exist,
except so great that they would be,
HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to subdivide them, because if they would be totally united, they would destroy the world.
So therefore the Roman Empire was split
and split again, until we have a world situation that we have today.
These are its heirs.
But the same with Israel. So noble will they be, and so great they will be,
that they also will be indestructible.
And therefore we see that during the time of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech,
this was the greatest empire in the world.
And even afterwards, no nation has ever succeeded in destroying Israel or taking from it their aristocracy.
And then the prophecy continued. Ula'om milom yamotz. No, excuse me. First it says, Shneil umi mimayich yiporedu, that these two empires will come from your womb, yiporedu, and they will separate. This means that while they're in the womb, they're together. Once they come out, they will go in opposite directions. They will not go in the same direction.
And this was the explanation of Ayisreitzatzu Habon. What was the great
birth pangs that were going on?
That they were, there was a Ritzu. They were going in opposite directions.
Two interpretations the prophecy had for us.
One is that when Rivka would walk by a Beis HaMedrash,
Yaakov would try to go out. And when Rivka would walk by a house of idolatry,
Esav would try to break out.
They were completely and totally contrary to each other.
Even in the womb by nature, Yaakov was drawn to
HaKadosh Baruch Hu,
to Torah.
Esav was drawn to idolatry.
And the womb couldn't hold them
because they were contrary to each other.
And therefore was the Vayisreitzatzu Habonim. And this is what is meant, Yiporedu, once they are born, they will separate. And then there's another interpretation that came from the prophecy. Hoyu merivin benachles shnei eilomais. Open up. They were merivin benachles shnei eilomais. There was a great fight and quarrel going on in the womb. They were quarreling over the inheritance of two worlds. And the Chazal explained, Yaakov, who had a talent for the Olam Habo, for the next world, he wanted this world also. And Esav, who was going to have a great talent for this world, he wanted the next world also. Therefore, Hoyamerivim, they were quarreling over the Nachles, the inheritance of the two worlds. Now we see a greater depth in this. These two children, or they were even embryos, they weren't satisfied to live lives of just an individual. They wanted the entire world. And not only did they want the entire world, they both wanted both worlds. These were the type of individuals we were dealing with. And the world to come was destined for Yaakov. This means spiritual world, spiritual endeavor, spiritual greatness. This was destined for Yaakov Avinu. But he wanted this world also. And the physical world was destined for Esav. But he wanted the next world also. So they were complete opposite and complete contrary to each other. And therefore there was this great Vayisreitzetzu. Now from here we learn something else. Contrary to popular opinion, that Esav was not just another person in the marketplace. Because Yitzchok, who was the great son of Abraham, the one who offered himself as a sacrifice to Hashem, would not have been prepared to choose Esav for the inheritance of the destiny of the world if Esav was just another fellow in the marketplace. But Esav was endowed with great ingenious powers, as Yaakov was. Except the powers of Yaakov, as we'll see in a few minutes, these were geared for the spiritual world. The powers of Esav for the physical world. And then the Torah tells us, Ulaom milom yemots. Not only two empires will they be, but there'll be two empires which are contrary to each other, and which will draw their strength from each other. One will become mighty from the other. Rashi brings the Gemara's drosha, Kishezeh kom, Kishezeh neifel zeh kom. When one will fall, the other will rise. When the other rises, this one will fall. They will never rule together. Leinivne tzur, the city of Tzur, Esau's cities will never be in power when Yerushalayim is in power, and Yerushalayim will never be rebuilt when Rome is built. There's a Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin where they ask someone, when will the Mashiach come to rebuild Yerushalayim? So he answered them, when the walls of Rome will fall and they will rebuild them again. And when they fall and they will rebuild them again. And then when they fall and they won't be able to rebuild them again, then you shall know Yerushalayim will come into its ultimate power. because leiniv netzur elam mikhurbona Yerushalayim. Ace of cities were built from the ruins of Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim will be rebuilt from the ruins of ace of cities. Kishzeh comes and Nefel, they both cannot reign at the same time, but each one will draw its strength from the other. This is what is meant to la'om milayim yemetz. One will draw from the other, and this is what we find. We find when Edom, Rome is in power, Klal Yisrael is not. When Yaakov will reign, then Rome will be destroyed. V'rav yaveit so'ir, and in the end, the older one shall serve the younger one. And this is why the womb could not hold these two people, and why Rivka was having these problems. Not only were they such superb individuals and such extraordinary individuals, but being totally contrary to each other, by Yisrotzitzu, they wanted to burst out of the womb. And this was causing the problems. Vayetzi Arishan Admaini, Vayimlu Yomeo Laledes, Vinei Seimi Bevitno. Came time to give birth, and they were Seimi Bevitno, they were twins. Vayetzi Arishan Admaini Kula Kadere Seor, Vayikrushma Esov. The first one came out, and he was entirely red. And he was full of, covered with hair, and they called him Esov. Rashi tells us, Admaini Simon Husi Sheifich Domin. The fact that he was a red, this was a sign that he would be Sheifich Domin, that he would be one who would spill blood. Kula kadere seor, mole sar, full of hair, kitalis shel tzemer amaleh. They called him Esav, because he was nasiv enigma besare ki ben shonim harbe. Esav means full of hair. He was called Esav because he was, at birth, he already was mature like someone several years old. Now what do we learn from here? The fact that he was red, this is a simon, a sign that he would spill blood. This we see from a little further. Because Al-Chabachotichya, the bracha that he received from his father was that he should live by the sword. Live by the sword. A sword is steel. It's iron. And the Chazal tell us that iron is what is used for Shvichas Domin. This is used for destruction. That's why the Gemara says that when you build the Mizbeach, when you build the altar, Avonim Shlemes, they must be made out of complete stones. You shall not take a sword and cut any of the stones of the Mizbeach, because that's contrary to the Mizbeach. Because steel, iron, this is what shortens a person's life. And the Mizbeach, the altar, was given to lengthen a person's life. The Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin, Sahalocha, it says that if someone hits another person, and the person dies, heaven forbid, so therefore he's brought to court to be tried for murder, so we have to make sure that the blow that he gave him was capable of killing the person. Because if it wasn't, then we couldn't convict him of first degree murder. So the Gemara says it depends what he hit him with. If he hit him with his fist, or if he hit him with the wood, or if he hit him with stone. The Gemara says if he hit him with iron, say, that under almost all circumstances is possible to kill a person. Iron was a creation in the world which had the ability to be makatsir, Yomim shel Odom, to shorten the days of people. And Esav was given that brocha al harbacha tichya, that he should live by the sword. The sword is iron, and this is contrary to Yaakov Avinu, because Yaakov Avinu was His was the Beis HaMikdash. He was the one who was to sleep in the place of the Beis HaMikdash. And he was the one who was to call the Beis HaMikdash Beisi. He, in Beis Hashem. Ein Zeki in Beis Elokim. This is the house of Hashem. And the Gemara tells us in Masech Techulin that Abraham called the site of the Beis HaMikdash Har, a mountain. That was the mountain of Moriah. Abraham referred to it as a mountain. And Yitzchak referred to it as a Soder. Last week, Sedra, when Rivka was brought to Yitzchak, Yitzchak was Lasuach Basoder. He was praying in this field that was the place of the Beis HaMikdash. But Yaakov, when he slept there, he said, Ein Zekim Beis Elokim, this is the house of Asher. And according to Baruch Hu said that I refer to Yaakov, as Yaakov referred it to, as my house, Beis HaMikdash. So Yaakov was the one who was to totally establish the Beis HaMikdash. This was contrary to Esav's powers of Shefech Domin, of Achar B'chotichya, that he should live by the sword. And there's a medrash that tells us that Daniel, the prophet, had a dream. And he saw four great monsters come out of the sea. And each monster illustrated another one of these great empires. And the fourth one that he saw was made of Parzelia of Barzel. It was made from steel. And this was Esav. And he also saw this one stamp and demolish and destroy everything that came under its foot, under its heel. This was Esav. That Esav would have the power of destruction. How you're dying, you're the Esav. They're the hands of Esav. Al harba chotichya, you shall live by the sword. Your sign shall be iron and steel. And it's interesting to note that as in the old days, today also war amongst the nations is based on iron and steel. All war equipment, whether it's conventional or atomic or nuclear, all depends on iron and steel. And armaments today, maybe not only today, is the biggest business in the world. And the figures are unbelievable. There have been recent surveys made of the percentage that the Western world or Russia spends on armaments. That's one of the hugest expenditures of the world today. And if we look through history, the war has never stopped. There was never a time when the war stopped. And this was Al-Harb Chotichya. This was the sword of Esav. And the wars are totally destructive. What did they achieve? This was, he was Admoni. He was read Shefech Domin. A second thing we can learn from here, that it states that when he was born, he was physically mature. This is a sign that he was very close to the physical world. This was going to be the master of the physical world. And history tells us this. When it came to physical development of this world, historians tell us that what is known today as the civilized world, Rome laid the cornerstone. And as we mentioned before, the Gemara tells us that the most intricate system of highways, this was master planned by the Roman Empire. The Gemara says they did it so they could move their armies from one place to another to conquer the world. And huge marketplaces. Beautiful buildings. This is modern civilization of which Rome laid the cornerstone. Not necessarily wisdom. Wisdom, the Chazal attribute to the Greek Empire. When it comes to the origins or the developments of medicine or mathematics or sciences or philosophy, these were the Greek scholars. It was a different type. But when it comes to the physical world itself, these were the sons of Esav. And Esav was very close to this, as we see that even when he was born, he was already matured. Then it states, V'achrei chein yotzo ochiv, and afterwards came his brother. V'yoda yechezes ba'akev Esav. The Maral cites that the fact that Esav was born first and Yaakov was born second also designates, because Esav was closer to the physical world, therefore he was born into the physical world first. Yaakov was more concealed, therefore he was born second. And then it states, when his brother came out, B'yodei Chezes Ba'akev Esav, he was holding on to the heel of Esav. What does this designate? So Rashi tells us, it designates Simon Shainze Maspik Ligmor Malchusei Achizer Emid Venait Lehimenu. It designates that the first one will reign first, but he will not finish his sovereignty until the other one will come and take it away from him. And as the Melech HaMashiach will do. But it states by the heel. The heel is the end of the person. At the end of the reigning of the first one, the second one will come and destroy him. Vayikra Shmei Yaakov. And then it says he was called Yaakov. Now by Esav it states Vayikru'u, they called him Esav. By Yaakov it states Vayikra, he was called. Who called him? Kodesh Baruch Hu said, Rashi tells us, Kodesh Baruch Hu called him. Because Hashem said, the Almighty said, you can name your firstborn. He told Yitzchok in the Rivka, Esav is your firstborn. You name him. But Yaakov is my firstborn. I shall name him. Yaakov is my son. The children grew up. Rashi tells us as long as they were young, nobody paid attention to them. You couldn't tell one from the other. But once they grew up, you could see a distinct difference between them. Esav was an ish yedei tzayid, ish sodeh. V'yakov ishtom yeshiva olim. Esav was a person who knew the hunt. He was a man of the field. And Yaakov was Ish Tom, was a person who was Tom. Tom means total sincerity and total truthfulness. Yeshiv Aholim, he dwelt in the tents. Now here, the Torah gives us a one-sentence description of the essence of Esav and the essence of Yaakov. It says, Esav was Ish Yodeh Tzayid. He knew the hunt. Ish Sodeh, and he was a man of the field. The simple sense is that he was a good hunter. He was a very good hunter. And it states, Isodeh kemashma odem botel v'tzudeh b'kashtei chayis v'efes. He was a person that even though, as we mentioned, we're not speaking here of just anyone. We're speaking here of a father of the world's greatest empire outside of Klal Yisrael. See, still, and even though he had tremendous ingenuity and tremendous talents, but still, he loved a luxurious life. He loved an irresponsible life. It states, Odom Bortle, a person who was of the field, who had nothing to do. And with his bow and arrow, he would hunt chayos ve'efes, animals and birds. Now this is a underlying insight into the Roman Empire. Historians tell us that the decay of the Roman Empire came because of their great seeking for idleness and luxury. That even though they had magnificent talents, but they squandered the talents with what they produced. They used it to build themselves great palaces, amass great fortunes, and live lives of luxury and idleness. And this was typical of all of the Roman aristocracy and all of the aristocracy of all of the European kings and queens, that they plundered the wealth of the masses and new civilization. They used it just to seek lives of luxury and of idleness off the backs of the masses, which from here came decay, unrest, and revolution. And it's interesting that this is exactly what the Torah tells us of Esav. He was a man of the hunt. He would hunt with his bow and arrow chayos ve'efes, animals and birds. Just recently, I read an historian's account of the last Tsar of Russia, who was the most powerful emperor of his time, over millions and millions of people, and over the world's most vast region. And he was amazed, this historian, that in the diary of the Tsar, in the same paragraph he could write in his daily diary, in the same paragraph of the most world-shattering events that he might have caused with his negotiations, and of how many pheasants he shot at the hunt that evening. He couldn't understand, as if this was all of the same level of importance. A man that millions upon millions lived or died in accordance to his signature, and his daily accounts with his negotiations with England or Germany or Austria was how was the pheasant hunt that evening. Sod chayes ve'efes v'kashtoi. Isode. Then it tells us that's the simple meaning. And then there's a deeper meaning. Ishudeyat Said. He was a person who could hunt. He was a person who could deceive people. He could deceive people with his mouth. Lotzudel Rame says Ovi Befiv, and he could even deceive his father with his mouth. Mishalo Abba, he would ask his father, Heyach Maasrin Esamelech Vesateven. He would come to his father with all type of difficult questions, straw, which is not edible. Do you have to give miser on it or not? Do you have to give a tenth away or not? Salt, which is not edible by itself. Do you have to give a tenth away to the Levim or not? And his father would think from these Shilas, these were things that nobody would bother asking. He would think from these Shilas. He was a medaktik mitzvah. He was very strict in the keeping of the mitzvahs. He would deceive his father. What does this have to do with hunting? I once heard in the name of Rabbi Shimshon of El Hirsch. Because hunting is deceiving. When you hunt, you try to deceive animals. You camouflage yourself. Or you stay on the side, you disguise, you put up a bait. So the whole hunting is trying to deceive animals. So Esav, besides a master in deceiving animals, he was a master in deceiving people. Now this point, that he was a master of deceiving people, this is a very, very important point into the nature of Esav and his descendants, and this is something that we could speak a long time on, that we don't have time this evening, but we'll just make mention of it, because this is a very important point. The Torah tells us, Vayav Yitzchok es Esav kitzayid b'fiv. Yitzchok loved Esav because kitzayid b'fiv, because he would bring him from his hunt. Now this posuk doesn't seem to make good sense. Here we're speaking of Yitzchok, the son of Abraham, and he loved Esav because he would bring him from his hunt. So again, the Chazal tell us, kitzayid b'fiv, we're speaking of the hunt of this deception. Yitzchok loved Esav because Esav was capable of deceiving him. And Yitzchok sincerely thought that Esav was a great, great tzaddik. Now we just explained that Esav had tremendous powers in other areas. But how was Yitzchok taken in that he would think Esav was such a great tzaddik, a righteous person, especially over Yaakov? So the answer is because Sayyid Bafif, he fell to his deception. But the question is, Yitzchok, such a wise person, how could he fall to his deception? What was he, an old man that was Cholila Ever Bottle, taken advantage of? The answer to this is, here lies one of the greatest powers of Esav and his descendants, the power of deception. The Torah tells us a little further that when Esav, it states in Posuk, in Breishis, Chof Vav, Posuk Lamed Aled, Vayi Esav ben Arboim Shona Vayi Kach Ishash Yehudis Bas Beri Achiti Ves Bosmet Bas Eilan Achiti. When Esav was 40 years old, he went and he took wives for himself. Why when he was 40? The reason is, the Chazal say, is because his father Yitzchok was 40 when he got married. And Esav wanted, at least outwardly, to emulate his father Yitzchok. And Rashi brings a posuk. Esav hayonim shel chazir. Esav was compared to the chazir, to the pig. As it states in Tehillim, Shenema yechasemeno chazir meyo'ar. That the chazir shall come and he shall demolish all of the pastures. Zu Esav. This is Esav. What is similar about Esav to the chazir? Kishusheche peshet tlof of lemeru shani Torah. Something very interesting. The Torah, when it tells us of the kosher animals and the treif animals, it gives us four examples of a treif animal, of a non-kosher animal, a behemoth tamei. It gives us four examples. The chazir, the gomel, the shofen, the anemis. Of all of the four animals that it gives us these examples, it tells us that a kosher animal must have two sides. His hoofs must be cloven, umalagero, and he must chew his cud, redigest his food. These are the two signs. Of the four examples of the impure animal, three of them redigest their food, but do not have cloven hoofs. One has cloven hoofs, but does not redigest his food. And that is the chazir. There's another medrash that says that when the Torah is referring to the four impure animals, it's also referring to the four empires we mentioned. And it says, chazir zu Esav. The chazir is Esav Edom, his empire. Now why? The two signs that were given to identify a kosher animal is echod mibachutz ve echod mibafnim. One is benigle, one is a revealed sign, And one is benister, one is a concealed side. You can easily check the hoofs of an animal to see if they're cloven or not. That you could see immediately. But how do you know if he chews his cud, if he redigests his food? This is something which is concealed. This is something which is very difficult to discern. This means tahara, purity, is based both on nigla and nister. Purity is based on chitzenius, the physical, the superficial, and pinimius, the internal, the external and the internal. If an animal is kosher, he's going to have external signs and internal signs. If an animal lacks one of these signs, then he's not kosher. Esav was like the chazir. External signs it has, does not have internal signs. And then Rashi brings from the Chazal that most animals sit with their hoofs beneath them. The chazir, when he sits down, he puts out his hoofs. Why? Because he wants to show people, here, ru'u, tahorani, see, I am kosher. This is Esav. Esav was a master where he could adopt all of the external signs of tahara, of purity, just as the chazir. His hoofs are as good as any hoofs of any kosher animal. He could adopt all the external signs of tahara, of purity, even though mibifnim, internally, he was as tome, as impure as the chazir. This is what it means that chazir zu Esav. Therefore, when he was 40, he said, my father got married when he was 40. My father's a great person. I will also get married when I was 40. Rashi said there was one difference, though, between him and Yitzchok. Yitzchok was a tohor. Yitzchok was the epitome of purity. Esav was geizli mechemsi, was called memshonohoya Esav tzod noshi mitachas yad ba'aleihem. For 40 years before Esav got married, he used to hunt wives from their husbands. Umane Esav, he would abduct them. Now when he's 40, he said, my father got married when I was 40. When he was 40, I also will get married when I am 40. This is Esav, and this is his power. The power of deception. Now when we speak of the power of deception, do not take it lightly. It doesn't mean that he was cunning and he was able to pull the wool over people's eyes sometimes. It means that it was such a power of deception where he was a genius, a master at this, where it was almost impossible to perceive this. This means that there was such a cloak, such a garment of beauty and of honor and of righteousness that surrounded Esav and his ancestors, that it was almost impossible to see what was happening inside. Just as if one would look at the chazir, not knowing the halach, and he would look at his hoofs, he would see that he's 100% kosher. This was Esav. And there's a reason for this too. Because this world has two attributes. There's the physical world, and then there's the spiritual world. Now these are not two separate worlds. They're really one world. Except the physical world is the garb for the spiritual world. It's the cloak, it's the garb. If Esav's world was this world, then he became the master of the cloak, of the garment. The master of the garb. And the Chazal tell us that the physical world in its own right is Alma de Shikra, is the world of Sheker. It's the world of deception. This world itself, we cannot tell truth from untruth,
from the world itself. This we have to go into the Torah for. This we have to go into the spirit. Moreh Bovabasa brings that someone once went into a coma. And when he awoke, they asked him, "What did you see?" And he said, "Elyonim lamato, lamato, and tachtenim lamailo." He said, "I saw that whoever is great in this world was not considered great in the next world. And whoever was not considered great in this world was great in the next world." He says, "Elam hofuch reisi, I saw an upside down world." So they told him, "No, elam borer reisi." He says, "You saw the right world. You're living in the upside down world." This is the Alma de Shikra. And Esau, being master of the physical world, was the master of the garb and the garment that camouflages totally this world. And you see that this went all the way down to his ancestors. Roman civilization, historians write today that they were the founders, the cornerstone of law. Much of our law is built on Roman law, of government and law. They were the cornerstone of. The Gemara brings, what does the Gemara think of that? The Gemara brings an episode where they had their senate and they had their judges. That a judge once sentenced a man to death for three notorious crimes. One was adultery, and one was spilling of blood and whatnot. And as the executioner was taking him off, he turned around to his colleague and he said, "I indulged myself in all three of them last night." This is what the Gemara thinks of their cornerstone of law. And so on and so on. It is well known. You take the German Empire, the Nazis, Yimach Shemo, were the cleanest nation in the world. When it came to hygiene, to health standards. Standards of sanitation. Hitler, your maximums, they say, that he was an extreme when it came to personal hygiene and personal cleanliness. Their cities were beautiful. Honor, nothing came before. This was the Chazir. Yet could there be anything more atomic? And they deceived the world. And they still deceive the world, even today. Today, just a few years later, after all of this was achieved by them, they're an honorable nation, an honorable people. They're the industrial giant of Europe. They're the masters of steel. Nobility, European nobility, the English. Anything is permitted as long as it's not made public. The greatest crime amongst the English is not Shvichas Domim. The English plundered all of the colonies of the world. The spilling of blood, that's not a crime. Adultery. Adultery is a way of life by their kings and queens all of the time. That's not a crime. What is the crime in England? Public scandal. If it becomes public, this is the crime. Or you take even the Pope. Who garbs himself in the most righteous attire in the world. And he is considered nivdel, separated from the rest of the world. It's impeccable. The whole pomp and circumstance of the Vatican. Yet the collaboration with the universal crimes of the Crusades or the pogroms or the Holocaust. This was all in order. This was Asaph. But do not take it lightly, because after thousands of years, this veneer has still not been shattered. Maybe, perhaps, to a degree. There's much we can speak on this, but this was the mastership of Asaph. Being a master over this world, he was a master over the sheker of this world, over the deceit of this world. We could give one final example. Notably, the highest tribunal of law in the world is the United Nations. Except the greatest mockery of justice and law at the same time in the world. How can these two things coexist? Only because the power of Asaph is in the world. And therefore it means Yitzchok loved him because Said the thief, he fell to his deception. Yaakov, it tells us, was just the opposite. On Yaakov it states, Yaakov Ishtom. Ishtom, this means Gvar Shalim. He was a complete person. Echod b'leib, echod b'peh. He was not a dual personality. What he said, what was on his heart, what was on his heart is what he said. Ishtam in sholem, complete and perfect. Rashi says, what does it mean? Ishtam en yochol erames es abriyais. He was incapable of deceiving people. Yaakov was known as the Ish Emes, the man of truth. Titein Emes LeYaakov. Yaakov was to become the heir of Torah. And Torah is truth. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is truth. Chesmei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes. The banner of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is truth. And this was Yaakov. Not only he didn't deceive, Rashi says, Eine Yochel Erames, he was incapable of deceiving the people. You see, Israel's great failure in the United Nations, because the United Nations and international politics is built on deception. And Israel are the children of Yaakov. Well, not only they're not good, they're incapable of deceiving. This was Yaakov Avinu, because Yaakov was the master of the spiritual world. And the spiritual world is the true world. Yaakov was the master over the internal. And this is how he was contrary to Esav. Yesheva Olim. What does it mean, Yesheva Olim? That he dwelled in the Ohel Shel Torah. Dwelled in Torah. So here we have a one-line description of the two sons. Esav was the one who was the Ish Sodeh, the man of the hunt. Gigantic capabilities, but seeking luxurious lives. Yedei Tzayid, the master of Sheker. And when we say the master of Sheker, we mean such a mastership that it's almost impossible to penetrate. And Yaakov Ishtam, Yaakov was the man of truth, where he could not deceive. What was on his heart was in his mouth. Because Yesheva Olim, and therefore he was drawn to Torah, which Torah is Emes, Torah is truth. Now this perception, this deception, overcame Yitzchok. After seeing all of Esav's great qualities, which he had, and then, in addition, his power of deception, and in addition, that he was the Bechor, he was the firstborn. And Yitzchok knew that the brachos that he was to give unto his children would go to the firstborn, should go to the firstborn. Therefore he chose Esav to give the brachos to. Rivka, did not succumb to this deception. The Chazal tell us, "Bina Yisera Nitmarisha." Another sense, another intuition was given to women, where they can perceive things that men cannot, where they can see through deceptions in Rivka's orders. So therefore she organized this whole scheme that Yaakov should take the brochas from Yitzchak instead of Esav. One final note. It states that when Esav came to Yitzchak and he says, "I am here, I have brought you what you've asked for. Give me a brocha." So Yitzchak said, "I already gave you a brocha, you are already here." And Vayecherad Harodo Gedel Abiyat, he became trembled with a great, great fear. Ro Piskushul Gehenim. He saw Gehenim open up before him. Because he said, "What happened? The brochas that were entrusted to me by Avraham Avinu and all of the Hatzloch of Klal Yisrael is dependent on this, and all of the success of the world is dependent on this. What did I do to these brochas?" But then, afterwards, he said, "Gam Boruchiyah. The one who came and took the brochas from me, your brother Yaakov, let him have it." What changed his mind so quickly? What changed his mind? The answer to this is something that my wife once told me. But it's in the Medrash Tanchuma, Rashi brings. Is that Yitzchak saw the greatness in both sons. He saw the greatness in Yaakov Avinu. But as we mentioned, being deceived by Esav and seeing also the great qualities in him, he was guided by the fact that Esav was the Bechor, was the firstborn. If he would have understood that Esav was a Rosho, then surely he would not have given him the brochas. But given these facts, and in addition to the fact that he was the Bechor, the firstborn, then he held, he must give him these brochas. And from here will come out Klal Yisrael. But he knew that only one from one would come out Klal Yisrael, because there was a prophecy before, Ki be Yitzchok yikore lecho Zorah. There was a prophecy given to Avraham that Avraham had told Yitzchak that from within Yitzchak your seed shall continue. Avraham's seed shall continue. So the Gemara Darshan's be Yitzchak, from within Yitzchak and not through all of Yitzchak. From within Yitzchak your seed will continue, but not all of Yitzchak. That means he will have two sons and the dynasty will follow through one. Now, when he thought that he gave the brochas illegally to Yaakov, then he saw this great, he had this great fear, and he saw Gehenna before him, and he said, "Ulai shonisi yaseda habechera. Perhaps I have changed the proper order, and I did wrongly, and then it would have been a tragic error." The Vilna Gaon writes in a place that had Rivka not stepped into this, then all would have been lost for Klal Yisrael. So these were the importance of the brochas. And then Esav started to wail. He started to cry. And he said, "Now I know why they called him Yaakov. Why he was holding on to my heel. Pamayim yakfeini. Twice he has tripped me by the heel." So Yitzchak asked him twice. "Yes," he said, "twice." He said, "Now he took my brochas, and before he took my birthright. I sold him the Cherosi, I sold him my birthright." So Yitzchak said, "You sold him your birthright? Then gam borachiyah, then let him be blessed. Because my main concern was, is that you were the firstborn, but you gave that to him, and he's the firstborn. Then let him be blessed. Let the brochas be with him." So this is how Yaakov ended up with the brochas. The Maral writes in a place though, that had the brochas been given to Yaakov, with a full heart. With a full heart. Not like they were, then Esav would have never had a power over Yaakov. The brachas would have saved him completely. And the reason why Esav has such a power over us in this world is because the brachas weren't given to him fully, with full intention. But nevertheless, they were given gam borach yeh. So therefore, the bracha continued through Yaakov and through his sons. This gives us insights into what took place into the sedra, in this sedra. And this is, as we mentioned, a basic tenet of Torah. Because the history of Klal Yisrael is destined between this war, this constant war that we find between Yaakov and Esav. The struggle for truth and for deceit in this world, which we see as a struggle every day, is this struggle of Yaakov and Esav. That's why it's brought that the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be only when the seed of Yaakov Avinu comes to overthrow Esav and his ancestors, when the Melech HaMashiach will come b'mehirah v'yameinu.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.